Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider.
We invite you over tonight for some conversation, laughter, spiritual opinions, and as many surprises as possible. Since only innocence can truly be surprised, please bring it with you.
Wow, let me take that in. Bring it with you. Our time to you with you tonight is gifted by our sponsor, Go Raw. 100% raw food that not only is good for you, but tastes good, yummy. Crunchy, yummy. Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. So go to goraw.com. And you can call us anytime tonight and join our conversation and our experience together at 888-627-6008. And come on in, have a seat. You want a glass of wine or something, a little water, a beer? You okay? All right. So let's get rolling tonight.
Wow, Rochelle. Tonight, 40 years ago today, we, Errol and I, moved in together in a sweet little house with red carpeting. Somehow I remember that very well. In Saratoga, California, not far from where we now reside.
What comes around goes around, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, what was it about you that made my heart say yes so quickly? I mean, we had only met like less than a month ago, but I knew you were the man who would travel this unbridled road to spiritual discovery.
I showed you my checking account right away. That was it.
That would have made me run. We wanted the same thing, to know God and become aware of our childship.
Do you know how many clothes I had to imagine taking off of Rochelle the first moment
I
saw you?
Oh, my God, I'm going to be so embarrassed.
Yeah, she was like piled on with clothing, and she was at the bottom of the steps where I lived in San Francisco. I lived in a second-story flat, and I was waiting to meet the staff of this theater, Montalvo Theater, that I was about to become the artistic director of their own. And Rochelle was at the bottom of the stairs. And like I say, it's a good thing I was very practiced in addressing people with. Unlike Lupin, living in a clothing optional community is, you can never be accused of undressing people with your eyes. It's like you're spared that one. Some haughty woman can't come up to you and say, "Would you stop? Hold. I am already undressed."
Oh, you're so bad, Errol.
Pretty much.
I mean, I'm talking about all the spiritual reality that occurred for me, and all you're talking about is getting my clothes off. Just goes to show
it's
you.
A male thing.
I mean, I was overcome by this man. I mean, who was brought up in the same culture as I, knew the offering of love as I did, was willing to do what was necessary to become that love. We together would kindle that fire. Together we would use our talents and personality to share our truth with others. I knew we would not always be in accord, as men and women usually aren't, but our love for God would constantly allow us to seek the highest ground in any dispute. And here we are, 40 years later, having become parents together, having faced the challenges and joys of life together, we are still growing and using our relationship as fodder for that growth. Now, that's fun to move through.
Fodder for the growth. So there's that, you know, and there we were, started living together, and there's that wonderful exalted place, and then, well.
Pay the bills, cut the grass. Someone forgot the trash. Oh, the talks we've had about the toilet seat. A few anniversaries, fights and apologies. Sometimes what love needs is a good referee. I'm his best friend, I'm his roommate, I'm his partner and his wife. He's my standing date for dinner, who stays over every night. Being married ain't a struggle, you can stay that way forever. chicken ain't gonna cook itself. How much did that cost? Who forgot to walk the dog? One's about to freeze to death, one's about to melt. I'm his best friend, I'm his roommate, I'm his partner and his wife. He's my standing day for dinner, he stays over every night. Being married ain't a struggle, you can stay that way forever. The hardest part is the living together. It's beautiful, it's ugly, it's passionate, it's don't touch me, it's being stubborn, it's giving in and waking up to it all again. I'm his best friend, I'm his roommate, I'm his partner and his wife. He's my standing babe for dinner, who stays over every night. Being married ain't a struggle, you can stay that way forever. The hardest part is living together. I'm his best friend, I'm his roommate, I'm his partner and his wife. He's my standing babe for dinner, who stays over every night. Being married ain't a struggle, you can stay that way forever. The hardest part is living.
That was so great, Errol. How'd you pick that song? I didn't know it was Dolly Parton.
It wasn't Dolly Parton.
No?
But it was a Dolly Parton sound-alike.
Oh, was that?
Amy Dolly, D-A-L-L-E-Y. Maybe you all know her out there.
D-A-L-L-Y.
Well, you know, there's this complex thing.
What was it called?
It's called Living Together. Excuse me.
Wow, did that sound like Dolly Parton? Okay, Living
so
Together.
So there we have all this combined experiences. I'd like to remind us, we reference many books on the show, one of which is a book called The Arantia Book, and I just, some of the thoughts stay with me, like this one. Men and women are practically regarded two distinct varieties of the same species living in close and intimate association. That's a quote from this book that is ostensibly a spiritual revelation. And
well, that was not revelation.
No, that was pretty obvious. But I think it's funny to context it that way. And on Inside Out, The Naked Truth, big part of our process together is Rochelle and I, over the years, no matter what things have happened, and they've been amazing and diverse and fit every category. One comes to mind. This was actually a recent one, and Rochelle had a cancer operation, and even now, as I think about that moment, and number one, we went ahead and broadcast the show at the hospital when she was in surgery, and then afterward, waiting for her to wake up, I went over to this restaurant, kind of like a chain, Chili's or one of those kinds of restaurants. Anyway, and I ordered some food, and it took forever and took forever. I don't know. They just kind of forgot me. And then at one point, she came over, the guy? The maitre d' or the owner manager, because I was like, I wasn't getting fed. And it was about 9, 10 at night. And I told him, my wife is in surgery for cancer now. And I just cried, you know, and it was telling this perfect stranger that moment. And like so many moments, the circumstances that bring about different kinds of experiences or feelings or awarenesses, if that's a word,
awarenesses,
are so amazing. That's why one of the things we adopted early when we had kids, we have a family motto, which we try our best to practice, and it's very simple.
Show up.
Pay attention.
Stay in touch.
Show up.
Pay attention.
Stay in touch. And in many ways, I think we both believe in it.
Yes, we do believe in it. I don't think it's many ways. We do believe in it.
And having that as a shared perspective, Rochelle and I, like we go through all the kinds of things that couples do, and we've got our baggage. It's our baggage. The difference between baggage and garbage, by the way, is that baggage doesn't smell anymore.
I was going to say exactly that same thing. Really? Garbage smells. Baggage doesn't smell.
But it's just as toxic, by the way, with or without the smell.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you can avoid that. You know, I think it's delusional to think you can avoid that. I don't think you can avoid the bumping into each other and pushing each other's buttons. To me, it's how fast you're willing to get out of it and forgive.
And also a big part of it is coming to understand the dynamics. For example, early in the relationship when I would feel Rochelle would feel like attacking me, she was just putting out her perspective, and I would react out of two things. One, insecurity and self-doubt, and then the cover-up, pride. You know, like it's not okay to be feel weak and frightened. That was a big thing that I had to work on during our relationship, was it's okay to be frightened of this woman. It's like there's this male guy in me. He goes, well, you shouldn't be frightened of a little lady. I mean, after all, what's the matter with you? This little lady, you could kick the shit out of her. You know, what are you frightened of, bozo? You know, what are you kind of some sentimental new age, you know, flirt, fart? I don't know. That's what that guy would say.
I don't think that much has changed in our relationship. I just think the recovery process is faster. We still have that knee-jerk reaction.
But yes, quicker, and we're able to recognize it much quickly. I think that's the point.
Very fast.
It does make the being together certainly more joyful, definitely more fun, because as soon as you catch it, yourself and that, you can laugh at it.
Exactly.
Because it's absurd. Because
exactly.
If you stop and look at it, like, why would my pride be threatened by anything that she could say or do, unless I have some image that I'm holding on to that I insist that you corroborate?
Yeah, and the same for me. I mean, you know, it's like I was talking to someone not too long ago, and you know, she was just going on about all the things that were wrong with her husband. And finally, I realized that, you know, yeah, we all are flawed in some way. You know, I don't mean that in a
derogatory. I know you
mean
pejorative.
Pejorative way. But the thing is that, you know, I said to her, well, make a list, you know, like put all the pros on one side and all the cons on the other. And if there's more pros than cons, forget the cons. And why dwell on them, you know, like. There's other things that are much more important, you know. Like when I married Errol, I remember on my wedding day, on our wedding day, I was in the car with my mom, and I said, "Well, you know, he's not perfect."
Lest there be any inclination to think of him in such a way.
And she said, "Nobody is," and you know, and that's what you'll discover.
But like I pointed out in our the Facebook note about our program tonight and our email, we moved in on January 6th and we met only on December 4th.
No, 12th.
We met at 9.
We met at 8.
I was on time.
No, you were late.
Ah, yes? I remember it well. We dined with friends.
We dined alone.
A tenor sang.
A baritone.
Ah, yes. I remember it well. That dazzling April moon.
There was none that night. And the month was June.
That's right. That's right.
It warms my heart to know that you remember still the way you do.
Ah, yes. I remember. Well, how often I've thought of that Friday
Monday
night when we had our last rendezvous, and somehow I foolishly wondered if you might by some chance be thinking of it too. That carriage ride,
you walked me home.
You lost a glove.
I lost a comb.
Yes, I remember it well. That brilliant sky.
We had some rain.
Those Russian songs.
From sunny Spain.
Yes, I remember it well. You wore a gown of gold.
I was all in blue.
Am I getting old?
Oh, no. Not you. How strong you were. How young and gay. A prince of love in every way.
Oh, yes. I remember it well.
It was on December 12th.
I remember.
So that means it's less than a month. And when the night I came down to get you from, I was living in San Francisco and you were living in Montesorino, right next to Los Gatos.
Where we are right now.
And it was raining, I think, wasn't it? And you were like standing outside in the rain. Do you remember that? When I drove up, it was dark or something. You were in a slicker.
Well, it was in the afternoon. I was in a slicker.
Yes, I remember it well. Yeah,
it had been raining, but it wasn't at the moment.
Yeah, I remember. and we went out to eat at like a Chinese restaurant.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember that well.
And that's when you first discovered and inside.
Right.
You went, oh my God, this guy cannot make up his mind.
Right.
Say more about that experience.
Well, I don't think it was exactly that night, but it definitely was early in our relationship when we went out to this Chinese restaurant and I knew exactly what I wanted to eat the minute we walked in and I ordered and Errol was looking at the menu and I said, and looking at the menu and looked over what somebody else was eating and asked questions about 8 million things on the menu, which he still does, by the way.
Yeah. And that restaurant down the street, have you been to that restaurant? And how's their beef bourguignon, by the way?
We're in a Chinese restaurant, sir.
Oh, right.
I remember it well. And I thought, he can't make up his mind very quickly, can he? And that was like, is this a red flag or is there more to him than indecisiveness about what to eat?
Oh, there was much more to come.
Oh, yes, there certainly was.
Much more challenges to your growth and tolerance. I mean, how do you build tolerance and patience if you don't bump into stuff that you just don't agree with and it doesn't seem to agree with you?
I think that's where love comes into it. You know, like there's this thing that's so much bigger than all the, what would I call it, like the stuff that we're made of, you know, the little stuff, the personality flaws and things that we have. And yet the love that's inside us is so, always felt like it was bigger than all those little things.
But it's interesting. Where are those little things? Like, you can instantly recall
them.
Well,
I keep mine in a closet and nicely organized. I don't know about yours. Knowing you, they're all over the place.
That was another interesting thing we discovered. Rochelle is very organized, and we share the same closet. You know, my way of opening the drawer was grabbing all the sweatshirts and throwing them on the ground and spreading them out and see which one I wanted. And then grabbing them up and stuffing them back in the drawer. And I was always surprised why it was the same amount of things that were going in and had come out, but somehow they didn't fit when they went back.
It had to do with organization. But nevertheless, these are things that, this, and strangely enough, you know, not much of this has changed. It's just our tolerance, not even tolerance, but our understanding that it's such a small thing in the larger scheme of things.
One story I'd like to share is one of the things I've gone through is struggling with depression and disappointment, and that could go on for a while. Not an easy place to live. and Rochelle will have to share her experience with it. But early on, and our kids were little, we were in a park in Boulder. And at one point, Rochelle turned to me and she said, I hate you. And I said, finally, we agree on something.
But it was that humor, and that humor which persists to this day, that somehow has kept us together. Because we've gone through everything that would break up a marriage, I think. I think we've gone through everything.
Except death. That would break up a marriage if one of us died.
Right. We haven't gotten to that yet.
But soon, probably not too far from now, you know. No. I noticed the last 70 years went kind of really quick, so I can't imagine that the next however many of them are going to go any slower.
It's funny. I know we say that it goes quick, but the truth is when I think back of how many incidents are part of those years and how many stories are part of those years, it doesn't seem quick. It seems like a really lot of stuff, certainly longer than a 2.5-hour movie.
Well, let me just reference. I won't go into detail about any of them, but just some scenarios. So there we were staying at a chapter house of the Franciscan Sisters of the Perpetual Adoration, a community of nuns who come together every 4 years up in La Crosse, Wisconsin, I believe. And one of our sons, Lev, was with us, I believe.
Yes.
And so just that experience, being with 900 of these women staying in their mother house and interacting with them. And then I had the privilege of performing for them a piece I wrote called Jesus Model for our class today, which I danced, bare-chested, wearing some dance pants and like tights. They're kind of revealing of shape of certain things.
Making sure you're a man.
Right, right. So there I was dancing in front of these nuns. And then I remember the time, maybe you could tell this story, we were doing a program at a Methodist church and some lady in Kansas.
Right.
Tell the story. It was.
She said she was very angry at me for whatever we were doing. You know, it just seemed definitely out of the box.
Now this is a full church congregation. There we're in
but
Kansas.
What were her words exactly? I want you.
I want you to go. Or I want you to stop.
Yeah, I want you to stop. I want you to leave. I want you to go away.
Yeah, it was like right there in front of everybody.
And in that moment, and of course. It hasn't really stayed as a... I'm sorry, Errol is using a dehumidifier in our studio, and I think it's robbing me of all my natural...
You do look a little kind of squishier, kind of prune-like tonight.
Robbing me of all my liquid.
You know, your mouth is like... It's a wonder you can speak because of the dehumidifier.
One of the things that I think we're always aware of, and I have to say this to you and to you, Errol, is that whatever else is going on in our life, we really do believe that we are friends.
Well, I don't think we believe it. I don't believe it.
We know it.
It reminds me of a short interview I saw with Carl Jung. It was produced by BBC, and he was interviewed by a British reporter. And I'd love to get this video. Carl Jung, you may remember, wrote the Boy Scout Manual and the Kama Sutra. Was that somebody else?
It was somebody. It was a lot of other people.
Yeah. Anyway, a great psychologist, anyway, who helped us understand some of the complexities of the unconscious mind, and et cetera. Anyway, he was being interviewed, and at one point the interviewer asked him, he said, Dr. Jung, do you believe in God? And there was this pause, I think. And I remember there was a smile, just a very knowing smile. And he says, I don't have to believe, I know. And it was like, yes.
Yes, yes.
It's like,
yes.
We have this thing in our culture, because we've been involved in the spiritual communities, like the nuns and the Methodists and the Baptist. Well, and
not just the spiritual community. We've been involved in religious communities. Because right. To me, they're spiritual communities, not necessarily religious, but right. We have been involved in mainstream religion, putting out our particular view of Christian, not Christian, but Jesus.
It reminds me, at one point we were teaching courses like The Artist as Spiritual Voyager. Yeah. That was one. We taught at a graduate program run by Matthew Fox. I saw him the other day. The guy's written 34 books. He's just so brilliant and articulate.
34 books?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was on Friday. Anyway, we were with Matthew at Mundelein College teaching this course, Artist's Spiritual Voyager. And at one point, do you remember what happened with that scene there?
Well, there were so many days of this, I have no idea what you're talking about. Give me a framework. This is part of our relationship. He says things I don't understand.
Well,
they don't have a beginning, middle,
okay,
and end.
She had gotten so good at finishing my sentences that I thought she could just go on and finish my thought, but I guess that's not going to happen.
Not yet.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't
gotten there yet.
It'll come back to me. Oh, I remember the story. So that's a Catholic university. He, at that time, he was still part of the Catholic Church before he was not excommunicated. What do they do when they throw him out?
Well, he was sort of let go.
Defrocked.
Oh, defrocked.
Yeah, he was defrocked. Defrocked is such a great word.
When you're in a nudist camp, yeah, everybody's defrocked.
Yeah, yes, you accept that when you go in. Matter of fact, you just signed the defrock waiver saying, I can't be defrocked.
Because I'm not wearing anything.
Because I'm not wearing anything. We were on our way back to Boulder, where we lived, from Chicago, where we had taught this three-month term, and we had many adventures there. And we were, for some reason, we were stopped in some town and they were doing some kind of show or some kind of event that had to do with Catholicism. And having just immersed myself in 3 months of Catholicism, and including serving the Eucharist at the Loyola Cathedral.
In Chicago.
In Chicago, right?
Yep.
And so when I was at this little event on the way back in Kansas, I just remember someone said, "Did anybody a Catholic or know something about it?" And I just raised my hand.
You are very impressionable.
I'm so impressionable.
Just give me one wafer and he becomes a Catholic.
Right. I'm an easy date from a Catholic perspective.
Well, needless to say, after 40 years, you have a lot of adventures with each other. And I remember the ones that led to laughter, because even the ones that would seem really kind of scary led to laughter. Don't you feel that way? I mean, they're always like, there's somewhere in every experience we've had together, there's I won't say a joke, but there's humor.
Well, inevitably, once you get to that point, if you've been holding on to something and there comes a point, however it's brought about, which I believe is the point of forgiveness, actually, mm-hmm. if you want to put a kind of a theological, spiritual word on it, it would be forgiveness. And that's when you essentially recognize that there's nothing to fear.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the big thing. And it's really hard to it's really hard to tell friends that are having difficulty in relationship that there's nothing to fear. Because it feels that way. It feels like their pride, their sense of self is on the line, and that they can become as nothing if they capitulate, if they give in, if they allow the other to win.
Well, and it all comes about because of this tension that is the ego. I love Thomas Merton. We've shared this before, the great, he was a monk, again, Catholic. Boy, I've been drawn to that Catholic mysticism. Studied his books for many years. You know, no man is an island. But he said the ego is a spasm, and you can really see that because it's this contrived self that you believe is the self that you are, but it really isn't, and it's like a sandcastle, and you're just busting your ass. The water's coming in all the time. Mm-hmm. And you're doing everything you can to keep that sandcastle alive and cooking until you realize that you aren't that particular shape in the sand. You are all of it, and you can take on any shape you want at any time. But that particular shape or form or image is not who you are. And to me, that's what waking up is about. It's realizing that I am not all that, all those things that I heretofore identified with, to the degree that I was deluded by duality. And on that thought, let's have another song from one of my favorite singers. Who knew that she wrote a song called, or sang a song, anniversary song?
Today has been a special day, an anniversary, a request that you play your piano as the evening sun slowly sets. I never thought I'd get this old, never had a reason to live so long, and the Lord's been like my shadow, even when I was wrong. No, I never thought it would turn out this way. A birthday with apologies for all the tears and regrets, and I've always saved. For these years when you forget, I never thought I'd get this old, never had a reason to live so long, and the Lord's been like my shadow, even when I was wrong. No, I never thought it would turn out this way. So sing with me softly as the day turns to night.
Cassidy? How do I know who you love?
Huh? I was sitting there having a Mildred.
Me too.
Now what that means is that's one of those little inside things that you create in a relationship. You know, a Mildred is when we're overcome by sentiment and are moved to tears. And it could happen to either one of us at any time.
This time it happened to both of us at the same time.
While that song was playing, we were looking into each other's eyes through the several pairs of glasses that
we now have
worked
to wear
out between them. One of the things I've noticed is I've get older. I don't know if it's because I've gotten older or because I just never noticed it. But in order to do something, you have to first do something else, and then you have to do something in order to get that. In order to wash the skillet, I have to get the sponge. But we left the sponge in the car because it was still in the package. But Rochelle had the car, so I have to go find Rochelle. She's down in the office. But she had to go show someone the place, so I have to go up to find the place to find her. And but
oh my God!
It just—it goes on and on.
That has nothing to do with us being old. That has something to do with us being dipsy.
Well, no, I just think there are certain things that they do. If you want to do this, but in order to do this, you have to have that particular thing, and then, but in order to get that, you have to remember where you left it. And it
oh,
just
that's a whole other story. Where you left it, yes, that is definitely true, and it's fun too to realize that your partner, and well, you, Errol, are also growing old. So that's you know, that they were sharing that too.
By the way, we would like to hear from you if any of you are out there and would just eager to join in our celebration. It's 888-627-6008. And as I all right.
Hello. Vaughn. Hello, Vaughn.
Hi, Vaughn.
Well, howdy, y'all.
Howdy, y'all yourself. Vaughn?
I'm calling from Milwaukee.
Yes?
Been here a few months and having a grand old time. Kind of a secret gem of the Midwest, I guess it's the Midwest.
Yes. I didn't know they still had a Milwaukee, so I'm glad. I'm glad they still have it, because there were rumors that there was not going to be any more Milwaukee. I don't know what they were going to trade it. You know how they trade these football teams? They were going to trade Milwaukee with Boston, I think.
Well, Vaughn, it's our person from our past. How wonderful to hear your voice.
Vaughn, what little gem. I remember you so well, and you were really into the tree business. You were like a tree monkey, tree guide. You still
like I often say, I was in the business correctly pruning shrubs and trees, and that's the hard part, doing it correctly. And right. I'm retired now.
Okay.
Semi-retired.
Uh huh.
I mean, you've gotten older too.
68.
Very good.
God bless you.
Well, Vaughn, give us some one little special thing that you want to share with us and our listening audience. Just give us one little gem of the Vaughnness that you are.
Sure. Okay, a quote.
Good.
Wow. Spiritual growth.
Oh, gee, I like it.
Stimulated by intimate association with other religionists.
Right.
Or I could give you one that I made up myself.
Oh, that's what I'd like to hear.
Okay. Trees, like children and other living things, benefit greatly by continued health care.
Trees, like other living things, benefit greatly by...
Well, I'll run it by you again. I actually, it's been so long since I said it. It's a little sketchy. Trees, like children.
This is a sign. You can't remember the ends of your own sentences. That's something I do all the time. You know, it's like you get halfway through the sentence, and then you know the end was there when you started, and then you kind of get there and you stop in the middle of that sentence, and you look around and you go, I knew the end of it, the predicate. So go ahead, Vaughn.
Well, maybe it's because the end changed once in a while. But anyway, the beginning goes like this. Trees, like children and other living things, benefit greatly by continued, what was that word? Growth?
Love would work for me. Adoration, caring. Well, thanks, Vaughn. Thanks for joining us. And blessings to you. And we'll send an email. We'll catch up again. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Thanks. Bye. So, Rochelle, that was Vaughn. So what does that bring to mind?
One of the things that I remember about Vaughn, and I hope you're still listening, Vaughn, you brought us a thing that we could hang upside down on. Wasn't that Vaughn? Wasn't it you who gave us that?
I don't think so.
No, I think he did.
Okay.
Well, anyway, I just remember hanging upside
here
down
we are.
And thinking it was terrifying.
Right. Well, the point was of the upside downness of it, which brings us to another metaphor. And that is...
There's something about living with another human being for a long period of time and really growing old with that person. I remember when my mom was married to my dad over 60 years and he was ailing. He'd lost a lot of weight. And she said to me, "He's not the man I married." And I said, "Well, Mom, you probably aren't the woman he married either." And she stopped as if I insulted her.
That's funny.
And we're not the people we were when we met or got married. Well, but the intention of our relationship has not changed.
No, but you brought up a whole other aspect is when you join with somebody, you're entering into this whole other family.
Right.
That you're now going to have whether you like it or not, or them or not, mm-hmm. you are going to be thrust into relationship with them, at least around some major events,
right.
like the marriage or what have you, and et cetera, et cetera. And when I think back about your parents, it's interesting because I spent hardly any of that period of my life with my parents. At that stage in my life, the only parents that I was really interacting with where I'd see them often was your parents, much more often than my own mom, and my dad had passed.
Right.
So if you all think about, you know, the families you enter into, like now we got to do this thing about now that our kids and they both are wives and they're married and all that, wives and married and all of that, of course, we have to trade with the in-laws as to who gets them for Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays. And it's it's like opens up this thing, and it's like we got to put in our reservations. We get you for Thanksgiving next year, you know. And her parents are going, no, not so fast.
yeah, it's very interesting. You know, of course, in years gone by when people lived close to each other, you'd all get together. You know, all the families of all the you know, the in-laws of the daughter-in-laws of some, you'd all be together and share in that kind of thing. And you'd come from long distances and sleep over. And it was, you know, I remember my father telling me that the relatives would come from many places, you know, and congregate in their house, and they'd sleep on the floor, and they'd sleep on couches and five or six in a bed,
really,
you know, for the holidays. And yeah, that was like a big thing, you know. So we don't do that quite as much as we used to, but
we could, because I have a tent. Anybody who comes to visit, and I have one room in the tent that's basically available for you. You come on down and join us here at Lupin Lodge, where we live and where we aspire to practice what we reach for.
That's right, as much as possible. I'm constantly amazed, you know, how much there was a time in our relationship when I became aware that I gave my power away to Errol.
Explain what that means. So that,
well, it's like I allowed him to make me feel good, and I allowed him to make me feel bad.
I love so that. He had, I love that power.
Power over me. So I say, you made me feel a certain way. And then one day I realized that he was not that powerful. He could not make me feel that way. I played in a big part in that game. And if I felt that way, I had to take responsibility for those feelings. And I've been working with that ever since. And it's not an easy job. You have to be ever mindful. You know, when you're, because we're so conditioned to do that, to make someone else responsible for our feelings. And especially in marriages, I think, in any partnership, whether it's a legitimate or, let's say, legal marriage or not, it doesn't matter. When you spend time in another person's atmosphere, you're constantly being made aware of that. You know, that person has a mood change and you're affected by it. You know, well, you don't have to be affected by it. You know, you are, but it doesn't have to be.
Now, while you're listening to this song I'm going to play, think about this. This to me is really, really rich, profound. Think of how many decisions we've made together or made that have affected each other. That.
Oh, God, I got a headache.
Yeah, right. Yeah, think about it, though.
Okay.
And the impact on your life.
Time passes by so quickly, but sweet. In this world.
That was Rochelle singing. Isn't that amazing?
And anybody who knows me knows that was not me.
She wrote that song and sang it for me for tonight.
Who was that, though?
Joyce Alexander.
Joyce Alexander?
I think so. It's from some kind of animated thing.
Animated, huh?
Yeah, I found one anniversary song that I can refer you to. You got to see it. It's just so weird. It was just so weird, and you can't really understand the thing very well. But it's I'll just give you a little quick taste of it.
Happy anniversary, pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary, but be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Fred, you remembered.
How could I ever forget the happiest day of my life?
Oh, happy anniversary.
Well, thanks, fellas. It sure was.
She and happy, they're both as happy as can be, celebrating merrily their happy anniversary.
And I didn't forget you, darling. Happy anniversary.
A tie. With spots on it already. Just what I always needed.
Oh, Fred.
Happy anniversary.
All right, fellas, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, happy anniversary. We now state emphatically it's happy anniversary. Not another day could be a happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
All right, knock it off.
The Flintstones.
Right.
You got to see it. It's one of those visuals with these funny-looking guys outside his house who are going singing that song. It was funny. I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, you know how to find it, people. Just go to YouTube, Flintstones.
And we are having an evening of Insight Out the Naked Truth. We're looking back at what it's like to have actually cohabitated for 40 years and some of the amazing things. And where we left off before that song, I think, is not a little thing, and that is decisions. Because one of the things that I read, hold on, is that it's by decisions that we grow. Who we got? Who we got? Hello.
Byron from California.
Byron.
Hello. Hey, Byron.
Byron.
Hey, you guys.
Byron.
My God, it's so special. I can't believe it. You met 40 years ago?
No, we moved together 40 years ago.
You cohabited beginning 40 years ago.
Yeah, today.
That's amazing. Right. That means living together, Byron. I know it's a strange concept to you, but when two people cohabitate, they kind of live together. Anyway.
I mean, but isn't that, kind of a little bit sinful, they say, I thought.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody said that. As a matter of fact, when we had a booking to do a gig at a church down here shortly after we were living together, and they found out that we were not married.
Legally,
and they canceled us out, Byron. Oh.
Not only that, they called us fornicators.
Yeah, yeah.
We were California fornicators.
California, right. I was kind of honored, actually, you know, that they gave us a title like that. It was great.
Well, I'm honored to talk to you on your 40th anniversary. I have a hard time getting through four nights with a woman. So.
Well, that's another story, Byron. We'll have you on the show, and we'll be talking about the single life of the enlightened man.
There you go.
2100 A.D.
So you can have me back on. Yes.
Huh? Say it again.
Darryl. No, then you can have me back on when you talk about sex in the enlightened single man.
Right. Oh, or no sex and the unenlightened.
As the case may be. At the moment, it's no sex.
There's a wide range of choices here. No sex, partial sex, the thought of sex, dream of sex.
Good to hear your voice, sweetheart.
Oh, I'm so proud of you for making it through. I've seen you go through a few swings, the two of you.
You have.
Yeah, I mean, and here you are, and you're laughing the whole show. I mean, you're joyous.
We're stupid. We don't know any better.
We got stupid. And it's really helpful. People think stupid is not so good. You know, you stupid. It really is actually good.
And, you have to go stupid rising.
Or lowering.
Stupidness rising in your 40th year. You're going into your 41st year living together.
That's right.
Yeah, we are. We are.
That's right.
And amazing. Your kids are happy and they're grown, they're married. So what else is there? I mean, what's up ahead
for the two? Don't know that
their
parents are grown.
Right. Yeah. Their relationship to their parents is dubious. But we have someone at the door. Let's see who it is. We're on radio right now. So. Anyway, our neighbor just dropped by, Jeremiah, and Jeremiah was the gentleman who helped put our roof of our porch together.
He put the porch together, never mind the roof.
Yes.
The porch.
Anyway.
So, Byron, we have a guest on
the show,
who's on the radio right with us now. He called in, and Jeremiah Osgood has walked into our studio.
So, Byron, give us some kind of succinct, but something.
Not too
Hello.
Stupid.
Meaty. Give us a meaty.
Give us a meaty moment or a meaty insight. Byron is a publisher. Byron has published some amazing books and has stuck through it all these years. You've had your own ups and downs, Byron, brother, and I admire your fortitude and perspicacity.
Not
many people have that perspicacity that you have. So
it's funny, after all of that, my mind went totally blank. So I think it's really the Zen insight about looking into your heart as deep as and below the words and beneath language into that place in the center within where God resides.
I love it.
Exactly. And be honest with you, though, Byron, I'm going to just kind of make a transition here because I don't think it would be a true anniversary experience if we didn't share this song. But thank you, brother. I love you, and we'll talk to you soon.
All righty, I'll sign off, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you,
here
darling.
We go.
Oh, how we danced.
Oh, my God.
On the night we were wed, we vowed our true love, though a word wasn't said. The world was in bloom, there were stars in the skies, except for the few that were there in your eyes. Dear, as I held you close in my arms, angels were singing a hymn to your charms, to hearts gently beating, murmuring low, darling, I love you so. The night seemed to fade into blossoming dawn. The sun shone anew, but the dance lingered on. Could we but recall that sweet moment sublime, we'd find that our love is unaltered by time.
I have to tell you about this song. My memory of this song.
Go.
I was 5 years old. We had a neighbor in Brooklyn, New York, who was learning how to make records. I mean, actually printing them. You know, like we came into, what do you call it, a tape recorder. This is before tape recorders, when you could actually put your voice on a record.
Right. Got
and
it.
And he had the record of this song, and he wanted us to sing along with it.
Oh my.
And we all sang along with the Anniversary Waltz and Al Jolson. And I was so impressed with this song. I thought it was so beautiful. I was 5 years old. It was the most romantic thing I'd ever heard.
That's so wonderful. What a memory. Well, that's probably going to be the memory we're going to have to leave you with tonight, except to say Al Jolson was the first talkie movie, was the jazz singer.
Yes, he was.
With Al Jolson.
Al Jolson.
Yeah.
This
so
goes back to 1929.
Yeah, yeah. Just a few years ago, before you know it.
Before I was born.
Before you know it, it'll be 2029, and this show will be a memory. As a matter of fact, it's fast becoming a memory because we're going to have to leave it. We're here Tuesday nights, Inside Out, The Naked Truth, broadcasting to you live from Lupin Lodge, where the
clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
And what do we need to remember, Rochelle?
Remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. And thank you, Byron.
Thanks, Byron.